question what outcomes you're driving towards rather than propagating common status quo practices that may not be serving you well in the world of today and tomorrow. You have a seat at the table, take it. Challenge the status quo.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Kavitha Mariappan, Executive Vice President, Customer Experience and Transformation from Zscaler. And today, we're discussing Zscaler's 2023 ransomware report. We will be linking the report in the show notes for those of you who want to dig a little bit deeper. So Kavitha, thanks so much for joining and welcome.
Thank you, Carissa. It's really fantastic to be here. And it's actually fantastic to be back here in Australia as well.
Yes, I'm glad. It's good to have you back for a very short period of time. So perhaps some of the key insights from the report. Now, ransomware impact is felt most acutely in the United States, which was a target for nearly half of the ransomware campaigns over the last 12 months. So part of the insights that I read as well is that Australia recorded 3.09% of ransomware attacks. So would you say this is linked to the US purely being a larger economy versus Australia? Or what are your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I think it's a great question, right? Look, ransomware attacks, as we have seen the landscape shift and evolve, becoming increasingly sophisticated. As much as us, you know, as technologists, as vendors, as enterprises continue to, you know, shore up, you know, our defenses, these attackers are actually using a variety of techniques, right, to exploit the multitude of vulnerabilities that are still present in many organizations, systems, and networks. You know, if you look at some of these vulnerabilities and techniques that they're using, they run the gamut, right, between phishing and social engineering and, you know, even sort of exploiting known vulnerabilities that many organizations haven't actually looked at mitigating and remediating. And the United States stands currently as a primary target for ransomware campaigns, as you've just pointed out, and is impacting and has been impacted more than any other country. And this could be, you know, due to a broad range of factors. I think first and foremost, the size of the population, the prominence of the United States as a significant economic powerhouse, you know, globally. And also, you know, as you looked at kind of the spread of how the United States workforce is today, you know, we have a broad range of, you know, hybrid working environments that have kind of remained with us since post-pandemic. You know, and this is sort of really resulting in a lot of new, you know, security and IT vulnerabilities. Having said that, we're also, you know, quite a significant in the United States, is a significant, you know, military and geopolitical force in the world. And we sit at the center of that. And so with a lot of these geopolitical tensions that are arising as well, it sort of starts, you know, becomes a bit of a target, I would say. We've talked a little bit about kind of how robust the economy is of the United States. We've talked about how it's, you know, a headquarters of a lot of multinational corporations, major financial institutions, as well as, you know, potentially the world's largest, you know, one of the largest militaries in the world, and also where a lot of the critical infrastructure also resides. So as an attackers see this as a, you know, a potential for significant financial benefits and gains by targeting the United States predominantly in this manner. And yes, we know a lot of these ransomware attacks are, you know, financially motivated. So as, you know, our threat actors look to extort money from victims, you know, the US becomes an interesting target. And also, you know, a lot of these threat actors are quite sophisticated. And some of this is, you know, other than the financial motivation, it's also, you know, the interest in being able to breach some of the very sophisticated and highly developed, you know, infrastructure and systems within the United States as well.
So Kev, would you also say, so you make great points. Some of the interview that I've been conducting recently is around like Australia is now becoming like one of the, like a major target for these types of attacks. Would you sort of agree with that through some of the work that you're sort of seeing and some of the reports that you guys are sort of distributing as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I think we only have to look at, you know, just the landscape of threat. Cyber attacks we've seen in Australia and the magnitude of it, right? In the last, I would say probably October last year, November last year, between, you know, Medibank and Optus and Latitude and just the many others, a significant amount of, I mean, these are, you know, large amounts of PII data that's being stored and being accessed and also, you know, being made vulnerable on the dark web here for very specific, you know, nefarious motivations. So I would absolutely say, you know, Australia is a target, has been a target, you know, very, very kind of documented evidence of incidents as well.
And it's interesting because Australia is quite a small nation. Like it's 26 million people versus the United States, which is what, 331 million people. So yeah, I was just trying to draw those conclusions because obviously the US makes sense with everything that you said, larger place, more people, bigger customers, companies, etc. But then Australia is like quite small though into comparison. So maybe like, do you have any thoughts on why, considering we are still such a small nation in regards to the, like the US as, yes, the breaches that you sort of spoke about before, but is there anything else that you would like to add to that?
You know, if you look at Australia as a country, right? I mean, Australia is a pretty formidable force here in the Asia Pacific region, right? And we've had, you know, very sophisticated organizations, technologies, and it's become the center of business for a lot of the sort of Australasian region. So I would say, you know, it's definitely a target. Having said that, we also have, as a country here in Australia, you know, a lot of legacy infrastructure and solutions because of the number of years of and sort of just the depth and breadth of businesses, you know, pretty significant player here in the economy of the region, right? And globally. And we do have a lot of technical debt in the region. I mean, in the state, you know, federal government, as well as just, you know, commercial enterprise organizations. And so it just makes it a very attractive target. If you just look back at some of these incidents that have occurred, you know, the attack surface is pretty broad and wide still.
So another interesting insight that I observed from the Zscaler report were organizations in the arts, entertainment, and recreation industry experienced the largest surge in ransomware attacks with a growth rate of over 430%. So what's going on here? Because this one I was actually a little bit surprised at.
Yeah, you know, and it's just an interesting, you know, I think it's important for us to kind of note sectors also started from a very relatively low baseline. I mean, we've never really, I don't think we've ever reported a lot of attacks in the arts, entertainment, recreation industry. So, you know, starting from low baseline, any growth and any multiples also look fairly significant and make it look fairly substantial, right? That said, I mean, these findings do emphasize that, you know, there is sort of a pervasive and evolving nature of ransomware attacks across a broad range of industries outside of sort of the traditional financial services, critical infrastructure, as well as healthcare, right? And so that's a little bit of a warning sign for, you know, all the other sort of sectors and segments to start thinking about, well, how, you know, manufacturing, education, how are we looking at all of these? You know, I mean, no one is exempt, I guess, is what, you know, this statistic, you know, points out to us at this point. And when, you know, these threat actors are, you know, singularly motivated, you know, for sort of financial gain, kind of show everybody else that they are able to do this, then they are going to be in relentless pursuit, you know, of profit, and that we all need to be aware and we need to make sure we have, you know, the right sort of mitigation measures in place.
Yeah, look, you raise a great point, and I understand like healthcare is obviously like sensitive information, and then financial services is obviously, you know, financially driven. So would you just say that going back to the arts, entertainment, and the recreation industry, that they were just an easy target? Maybe that's why that 430% growth rate is there, because maybe they thought, oh, well, like no one will really bother or think about us because maybe we don't have anything of value compared to healthcare or financial services. Do you think there is that element of it? But now that's come to the front, companies in those industries are going to be very focused on, well, what do I need to do to ensure that I'm not the next sort of victim of these types of attacks?
Yeah, I think, look, you know, as we think about anything that we think about, right, and other than sort of, you know, healthcare and personally identifiable information like, you know, our tax file numbers, our bank accounts, driver's license numbers, passport numbers, and birth dates and all of that, intellectual property is really important, right? I mean, if we think about, you know, looking at the entertainment industry, there's a lot of core intellectual property that companies monetize. I mean, many years ago, there were companies like Sony, et cetera, that got hit, where there's just a lot of, you know, in the entertainment industry, very, very monetizable, you know, IP there, right? And so, you know, yeah, I think people might not be thinking about kind of the value of the intellectual property. I mean, another interesting target, if you really think about it, is education institutions, specifically higher education, tertiary institutions, where tremendous amount of research is being done, right? Like we're talking cutting edge research Some of this is within these universities. Some of this is interdisciplinary. Some of this is with inter-universities. There's a lot of like fantastic information there that, you know, if these institutions aren't thinking about putting, you know, the right sort of security measures and practices in place, some of this critical information will get into the, you know, terrible hands. One example to quote would be, think about like when we look at maritime and, you know, and those types of like, you know, departments, we're like, well, what information are they really going to have? I mean, imagine studying the ocean floor around Australia. Imagine understanding, you know, some of this work that they're doing, you know, to protect, you know, and just kind of preserve marine life, et cetera. Some of this information getting into the wrong hands would also provide, you know, from a geopolitical perspective, you know, nation state attackers, physical information about the country, right? And the borders. And so, you know, we have to really sort of start to think about, you know, all these other sectors where they might think they don't have valuable information to maybe, you know, take a step back and think about what interesting or important intellectual property you might hold. And obviously, when you talk about the education sector, there's also the protection of minors, right? We have a duty of care to protect our children, our minors, our students' private information from not getting out there into the wrong hands as well.
Great points. So I just want to go back to the arts, entertainment, and the recreation industry. You mentioned before monetizable IP. Do you have an example of like what would be valuable in those industries that people would sort of want to get their hands on? Because what you said around, you know, surveilling like the ocean floor from a geopolitical makes sense. So I'm trying to just link it back to like the arts and entertainment.
No, absolutely. Think about it, right? If you're filming a movie over here and you've got, you know, a lot of the footage, for example, I mean, a lot of Hollywood comes out here, for example, to Australia. In Australia, we're a big market for the entertainment industry, right? There's also, you know, music and all of that, you know, recordings, you know, all the original, you know, intellectual property that goes with this, right? Now, we make, you know, these organizations make money out of this. Like, we know the box office makes money out of releasing movies or albums, et cetera. Well, some of this stuff just gets into the wrong hands. These companies, you know, profitability is going to be impacted, right? So I think that's an interesting one to think about.
So do you envision that? Yes, we know about the historical healthcare and financial services and all of that. So do you envision that this 430% growth rate, like next year, if we have an interview, do you think that number will sort of just sustain now? Do you think it'll go up? Do you think it'll go down? Or do you have any sort of, I know that's a bit of a hard question to answer, you don't have a crystal ball, but it's just more so just hearing your opinion on the matter.
Well, we're tracking it. Definitely don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you, Chris, next year is going to be 800% or it's going to be 200%. What I can tell you is like taking advantage of these reports that come out from, say, you know, vendors and companies like ourselves with Threat Labs and many of our other ecosystem partners, taking them seriously and actually, you know, doing something about it, hopefully will stem some of the, you know, the growth on these, you know, statistics so that we don't start seeing exponential growth year on year. So that would be my guidance to, you know, organizations across different sectors. We start thinking about wherever you think it doesn't matter, it does matter. And also, you know, I think, you know, the responsibility also of management to an executive management when they're thinking of budgets, ensuring that, you know, right amount of budgets are being appropriated for cybersecurity, right? And IT modernization so that they don't fall victim to some of this. Because reputation and brand damage in some of these areas, they're irrecoverable.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the other thing I think, you know, even speaking to people over the years on this show is like, how do you measure that? Like, for example, we go back to some of these big high profile breaches in Australia, like they lost market cap. You looked at their stock price in that week when they got breached, went down. But then it's like, well, how do you get customers back? Like, that could take years to rebuild. So would you say in your experience, Cav, that people don't maybe consider that as much, like the longevity and the sustainability of that company moving forward after a breach?
If you've been, you know, banking with a bank and like all your stuff went out there, or, you know, there's been an incident, right? You're going to consider, well, am I really going to bank with X bank, or, you know, your private health insurance with a certain company, and like all your records are out there. And some of the information that went out weren't just PII data. It was like very specific health information that can be used in a very punitive, you know, and discriminatory manner, right? And so people may not want to associate themselves with an organization like that. So the churn rate is pretty high. And so for an organization like that, especially when you're taking care of people's health, people's money, people's safety, right? People's children's health information and personal information, it could take many, many years to rebuild that credibility as part of that, you know, and you lose customers, your profitability is going to be impacted.
Yeah, most definitely. So I want to sort of shift gears now to talk about something else that was in the report. Now, Australia ranked as one of the highest affected countries of the black cat infection with approximately 5.2%. So maybe if you could just, if people who those who aren't familiar with black cat infection, maybe explain what it is.
Black Cat Group is a sophisticated operation, right? It's been sort of active actually for the last couple of years, I'd say nearly about 18 months or so. And they've been known to use a variety of methods to sort of infiltrate their victims' networks. You know, part of that is, you know, also including sort of known vulnerabilities, stuff like social engineering and phishing attacks. And so once these Black Cat, you know, operators are inside a network, they'll use a combination of these tools and techniques that they have to move laterally across, you know, that network and sort of penetrate, you know, the topology, right, of this particular organization that they've infiltrated. And once they do that, they're able to sort of escalate their privileges, you know, and gain access, escalate privileges, and then exfiltrate data from these organizations that they have breached. And when they're doing that, they obviously, you know, deploy their ransomware payload, which directly encrypts that victim's files. So if, you know, a little bit of a background, you know, Black Cat is implemented in Rust, in the Rust programming language, which is really efficient for file encryption and cross-platform compatibility. And because Black Cat actually leverages an affiliate network to conduct its breaches and exfiltrate data and also deploy the ransomware, the flow of these attacks varies really widely, you know, between all their affiliates. So as we've seen, like, you know, Black Cat affiliates have been observed to include like a broad range of like multi-extortion techniques, including DDoS attacks. And also these attacks and these tactics actually have involved launching attacks on either the victim's website or network, and then to pressure them into negotiating with operators and compelling them to pay higher and higher ransom amounts, right? And in cases where, you know, a victim refuses to comply with these ransom demands and associated threats, then they post that stolen data during the breach on their data leak site. And, you know, and this is kind of where the double extortion element happens, right? And you sort of see that, you know, the attack sort of really starts, their ability to attack starts to demonstrate not just the sophistication and creativity, but the lengths that they're willing to go as a ransomware group. And, you know, because of this affiliate network that they've got a, you know, pretty sophisticated ability and to evade detection and constantly be sort of maximizing profits from these attacks per se.
Yeah, okay. That's very interesting. So what would be your conclusion as to why Australia ranked sort of the highest then, according to the Zscaler report?
Australia is, you know, known to have a really entrenched and robust services industry, right? And although Black Cat has focused across multiple sectors, here they really, you know, have focused predominantly in the services industry, which, you know, if you had look at kind of the group's total attacks, it really like it was, you know, services industry amounted to about 13.78%, I believe, of the group's total attacks. And when we look at the services industry, kind of, you know, involves providing professional, technical, and support services. And they also, the other sector they looked at was also manufacturing, which Australia here, we're, you know, massive on manufacturing. And that was about 12.99% of Black Cat's kind of percentage of like, you know, their attack targets, right? And then the other area was, I would say, probably legal services, which again, we have quite entrenched in, and that was about 8.27%. So I think they probably looked at these sectors, right? Services, low-hanging fruit, manufacturing, as well as legal, and said, look, you know, the kind of data we are going to be able to exfiltrate from here are sensitive legal information. We're going to have client data, a lot of intellectual property associated with these organizations. And then, of course, you know, they did target the financial services sector as well for, I think it's about 5.51% of the attacks. They did get across, you know, a broad range of sectors here. And, you know, this kind of really shows Australia actually ranked among, as you said, one of the highest attacked affected countries. So Australia was about 5.2% of Black Cat's attack victims. And it just shows their ability, you know, they had a target-rich environment that, you know, with a lot of monetizable elements that they could exfiltrate pretty quickly. And just it just goes to show, again, what we were talking about right at the beginning about what sometimes we might be overlooking, thinking about our own, you know, these different industries, that there isn't that kind of interesting information for these guys to get to.
Would you say as well, because of these high-profile breaches that we incurred last year in Australia, that Australia as a nation has a target on its back now?
I think everybody has a target on their backs, right? But I think it's brought to bear that there's word on the street, and please, you know, I'm not have no empirical evidence, but that more than 50% of the Australian population's, you know, very sensitive data is now on the dark web, is after all these very high profile breaches between passport numbers and all this, like, you know, PII information, right? And so I think there's definitely a spotlight on, but I think the spotlight should be is on everybody, right? These folks, they're looking at where they're going to make money fast. They're looking at how are they going to make money quickly, and they're looking at how they're going to escape being caught.
Yeah. And I ask that because, again, going back to that, we're such a small nation, right? Like, it makes so much sense. Like, oh, let's just go after the US, big place, lots of people, lots of money and stuff. Whereas Australia just is only a small percentage in comparison. So it's always interesting to hear people's thoughts on, like, what that conclusion is. But it's probably everything that you just said, as well as we have had those high profile breaches now, which does make it a little bit more appetizing for these criminals.
Absolutely. And look, I mean, you know, relative to the size of the United States, you know, or China, whatever, you look at Australia from a population perspective, and you can say, yeah, it's small, but Australia is actually a pretty prominent global nation, right? I mean, looking at the country's GDP, looking at just, you know, our stance geopolitically here in the region, and part of the G7, we're part of, you know, Five Eyes, we're part of a lot of, like, critical global political and commercial decision making, right? We have a seat at the table. So we are one of those countries.
So the other observation that I had from the report is that there are 25 new ransomware families who are identified as using double extortion or encryption less extortion attacks this year. So I'm assuming that we will not see any of this going away. Like, you know, in a year's time, we do an interview, this is still going to be quite prominent with what you're seeing in your reports.
Our humble desire is obviously that, you know, this goes away and everybody's safe. But, you know, everybody's at different stages of how they're tackling sort of their IT infrastructure, how they're, you know, looking to evolve their security implementations to be commensurate with, you know, a sort of cloud, mobile, and, you know, an internet first world, right? And so everybody's at different stages. And I think until everybody gets, you know, moves away from, you know, legacy security solutions, right, and really starts to assess and look at their threat landscape and make sure they understand where everything is and make sure that right defenses are in place, we're going to continue to see these statistics increase. And we're living our lives more and more online, right? I mean, our digital breadcrumbs of everything that we do online. I mean, everything we do is online. We bank online, healthcare is online, we socialize online, we educate online, everything. And so our lives are out there.
So a couple of thoughts before we conclude the interview today is, I want to get your thoughts just on generative AI. So there's so many opinions, thoughts floating around the market. So however you interpret that question, I'm all ears.
To me, when I look at it, I think it's an exciting time to be alive, and it's an exciting time to be in the industry, right? I think AI, machine learning, well, AI has been around since the 1950s, right? So much work has been done, you know, in it to evolve and, you know, make machine learning super sophisticated. I think what really wasn't there, you know, was, you know, the human machine sort of cognition, right? That needed to happen. And we're seeing a lot of that now. So just like the internet was a revolution, AI and generative AI, this is going to be a massive revolution. And I think anybody that's not paying attention to it, or, you know, starting to, like, leverage this or look at this, I mean, there's the good and the bad and everything, right? They're going to miss this wave. And so it's definitely something for all of us to pay attention to. It's absolutely game-changing, generative AI, right? There's so much, there are volumes and volumes of data out there, right? And sadly, threat actors also look at this as an opportunity for them to seize some of this information, right? And to sort of refine, like, when you look at, like, you know, phishing, like, you know, just the phishing, the pretext. Emails are getting written much better, so much better that you don't realize it's coming from the Nigerian prince anymore, right? to ask you for money or from other kind of, you know, nation state attackers. And so that's some of the bad side of it. What are all the other things that can be done with it? You know, there's the potential for the bad side of this is broad. There's also the potential for the good side of it for us to be able to leverage some of this and really advance, you know, threat hunting and threat detection and just day-to-day business operations in terms of how companies run their businesses, how they do it, you know, their documentation, legal, their customer service organizations. There's just a lot of potential. And so I think recognizing that is really important. And at least for us as a company, we're sort of recognizing that it's a really significant technology. And we've always been very AI and machine learning first, right? In terms of like trying to incorporate a lot of that, those capabilities into our platform in general, specifically around data protection, as well as digital experience monitoring. We're taking a massive, I would say, quantum leap forward by, you know, with a lot of the new introductions that we're bringing to the market in this area, because we really want our customers to be able to like safely harness the power of generative AI, right, to predict and stop breaches. So it's a first-class citizen for us as a company. And as it should be for the industry.
Yeah, and it's still uncharted waters. Like, it's still relatively, like, this version of it is still relatively new. So it's not like anyone has a rule book that we can follow the bouncing ball. So it's going to evolve, and it's going to take conversations like this for people to learn and to gain insights from and see how this unfolds. I want to focus now the interview more on you and your role, and I'm keen to hear a little bit more about what you've been up to as an executive vice president at Zscaler.
My role, as you know, I've been with Zscaler for, I'm actually coming up to 5 years. Yeah, just after the company went public. I have been in the industry for, I would say, coming up to 29 years, actually, this November. I started in engineering and began right here in Melbourne at RMIT, and had a fantastic sort of, you know, humbling career and in tech, 24 years of it in the Silicon Valley. You know, my role really is to focus on our customer health, right? So I'm really responsible for our kind of global customer operations, customer health, making sure that every interaction with us, and when I say customer, I broaden it to future customers and current customers, that every experience and interaction they have with us as a company is positive. And what can we be doing there, right? And so I focus, and my organization really focuses very heavily on the key decision makers. So specifically head of IT, the CIO, head of security, the CISO, head of network infrastructure, the CTO, head of architecture, as well as, you know, the CFO and the CEOs. And now we're really focusing also on boards of directors, because our goal really is to make sure that every single one of them understand and are equipped to handle this evolving sort of threat landscape. You know, it's technology, it's people, it's process, it's policy, and all of those things. And the other aspect of my role is to also look at new routes to revenue. So focusing on really sort of strategic, you know, projects for the company and the industry. For example, you know, if we take a look at zero trust education awareness, creating and harmonizing standards and frameworks around that, working with a lot of the, you know, standards organizations, working with policymakers in government at the federal level, at the state, local government level. And then also looking at strategic things like, you know, cyber insurance. Well, how do we make sure that, you know, looking at our cyber insurance policy, for example, how do we make sure that, you know, whereas an industry are following kind of the right frameworks, there's uniformity around a lot of that. So I spend the majority of my time working with our customers and future customers. I'm on the road a lot globally, meeting many of them and learning from them and kind of, you know, connecting a lot of the dots back to our product and engineering and cloud operations teams.
Yes, you definitely are on the road a lot. Every time I see you pop up on my LinkedIn, it's always you're here, there, you're in Australia for a bit, and now you're going back and you're doing all these other things, which is exciting. So I think it's important to ask that question just due to you being quite senior in your role. And then my last question for you is, do you have any sort of closing comments or final thoughts you'd like to leave our audience with today?
First and foremost, thank you for, you know, thinking of Zscaler. Thank you for thinking of me and you know, giving us this opportunity. It's awesome. So thank you so much. Look, my advice, you know, my parting thought is, to me, as I said earlier, there is no more exciting time to be in IT and security than today. I know it can look very daunting. And you said earlier, my God, no, and I interview a lot of people like you, you know, it's scary out there, right? It's an exciting time. It allows us to really push the boundaries of what we need to be doing and really start to think outside the box and really start thinking about challenging the status quo. So, you know, my parting thoughts to IT security leaders and practitioners out there is, you know, question what outcomes you're driving towards rather than propagating, you know, common status quo practices that may not be serving you well in the world of today and tomorrow. Challenge them. You have a seat at the table, and, you know, technologists today are the coolest people in the room, right? And it used to be business people, but, you know, the geeks are having their day today. So you have a seat at the table, take it. Take it, challenge the status quo.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MercSec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MercSec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.